Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Live from the Investors Bank Studio, Boomer Esiason and Greg Giannotti, Boomer and Gio on the Fan, and simulcast across the country on CBS Sports Network. Good Monday morning. Hope you had a wonderful weekend. We didn't have a ton of baseball last week, and we had a ton of wins with both baseball teams over the weekend as the Mets sweep a series. They win consecutive games for the first time in a month and then finish it off yesterday. And after a sloppy start on Friday night, the Yankees win a couple of games with the home run. The Golden State Warriors cannot be denied. The Vegas Golden Knights go to the Cup Final. The Rangers look like they have a coach. We've got a lot for you today. Good morning, Boomer. How are you?
All right. Good morning, Gio. Yeah, nice weekend for the New York Mets for sure as they take three from the Arizona Diamondbacks. And they get two really good pitching performances from DeGrom and Syndergaard. And I get it. And everybody's all jacked up about it. But let's face it. Arizona came in here basically on the downturn. Even though they still aren't in first place out in their division, they weren't hitting the ball at all. And that continued pretty much against the two stars for the New York Mets. And the Mets finally, you know, broke loose, got back-to-back wins, and ultimately get three wins over the weekend. It was nice. It was nice to actually see them win a DeGrom and a Syndergaard start with those guys being dominant. And then finally the bats waking up yesterday. And Rosario had himself a day. So now the question is, you know, is this something that's going to be a little bit of a launching pad? Because now they play the Marlins for three games. Is this going to be something that's just going to be a blip in the radar? Or where is this team going to be? So, and then, of course, you know, we leave and we come to find out that Juan Lagares is out for the season.
I know.
I mean, I feel so bad for that kid, man. I can't even begin to tell you. Seems like every time he's about ready to get a shot, something happens.
Right, and him giving maximum effort on a defensive play.
In a meaningless game.
Right, exactly. But still, I'm not going to blame him for it. It's just the unfortunate circumstances. But yeah, you're right. I mean, he's getting a little bit of run. He's hitting the ball, and then all of a sudden, boom. He's not only is he injured, but he's out for the entire year. And, you know, I don't want to minimize what the Mets did over the weekend, but I'm kind of feeling like I need to, in a sense, because, yeah, you got Syndergaard and DeGrom, who were great, but in the middle there, you came back, which was nice, but you got another bad Steven Matz start. You got Jason Vargas on the mound tonight. You don't expect much from him at all. I don't know what the hell you're going to get from Zach Wheeler. So, basically, yes, Syndergaard and DeGrom are great. You win those games. You come back on Saturday night, but what is the rest of this rotation? And that's what really needs to be figured out. Is Jason Vargas going to be a positive at any point in this year? Is Zach Wheeler going to find himself at any point? Are we going to get Seth Lugo in the rotation? These are all questions that I have for them. But yes, they needed to have a moment like this, have a weekend like this for once. And they did, and they should continue it against the Miami Marlins. But you just don't know with the other pitchers that they throw out there past their two aces.
Well, the thing about Vargas, he's given up 26 runs in the last three games. I mean, 26 hits in the last three games. And I want to say it's probably somewhere around 16 or 17 runs in the last three games. I mean, it's awful. And Steven Matz was bad again. I mean, I it's just a matter of time before they put Seth Lugo in the starting rotation. That's what I would think. No matter how good the bullpen is, and maybe when you look at it, you say, okay, we have two bona fide number ones, a 1A, whatever, and then after that, it's a crapshoot. And if we're going to win games, we have to have a strong bullpen because those guys are going to be required to come into games like they were for Steven Matz. So, I don't know. Mickey Callaway's got a lot of decisions to make there, but I think what he wants, I would imagine, I'm just trying to put myself in his seat, thinking that, you know, three-fifths out of my rotation is not very good. Therefore, I have to have a fortified bullpen in order to support them.
Right.
So That's why I need Gesellman. That's why I need Lugo out there, because I'm not asking them to go out and give me six, seven innings. Because what happens if you take those two guys out of the bullpen and you put them in the starting rotation and they only go four or five innings? Then what happens?
Yeah.
Then all of a sudden what was once a strength now becomes a glaring weakness. See, we're assuming that either Lugo or Gesellman could be a starter and they could go six or seven innings. We're assuming that, but we don't know that yet because we haven't seen that from them this year because that's not their role.
Yeah, I don't want to pull Gesellman out of the bullpen, and he gets his first save. I think that he is just perfect for late innings now, using him in higher leverage situations. Lugo, on the other hand, he's better than three of the starters
I know
they
that,
have.
But you understand what I'm saying?
It's about the stabilizing the starting pitching before anything else.
Well, let's hope Vargas gets its going now. I mean, why would you give Vargas a two-year deal if you didn't think? I mean, if you knew that he was going to be this bad.
Well, of course.
Of course, you would never do that. But the fact is, somebody felt like, you know, this kid can, you know, or this guy could bring something to this team. That's why they gave him a two-year deal. I don't know. Does the reclamation project start tonight? I guess we'll see. But I don't know. Now, as far as the Yankees are concerned, it seems like the only time we really get into the whole Sonny Gray thing is when he craps the bed, which he has not done three out of his last four outings.
Yep.
Three out of his last four outings have actually been very good. Now, when you get 10 runs and you get that kind of support, it's kind of easy to go out there. Not easy, but I would think a little bit easier to go out there and pitch, especially when you're playing against a light-hitting team like the Royals. So that's three out of four of his last outings have been really good, have been right around 93, 94 pitches. He's gone at least six innings. His ERA has been down in those games. He had the one bad outing against his former team, the Oakland A's. So we never really talk about him when he actually has a good game. We always talk about him when he comes off of a stinker and everybody says this is going to be the hole in the starting rotation for the New York Yankees.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he's so very important in the rotation. Seeing that is just great. Anytime you could stack those good starts for Sonny Gray, you start to feel better about him in starts that matter in the postseason. But, I mean, really, the problem with the Yankees right now is they've got too many good players. That's the only problem with the Yankees.
Good problem to have.
They've got too many good players. They're going to have to send down Tyler Austin when Greg Bird comes back, because that's the only decision that they can make when it comes to roster configuration. A guy who leads all rookies in home runs and RBIs, they're going to have to send him down when Greg Bird comes back. I mean, think about that. They already had to send Drury to the minors after his rehab stint because Andujar was so good. Now they're going to have to do it again with another one of these guys. It's incredible. It's absolutely incredible the depth and the talent that they have. I mean, these are the things that you talk about with the Yankees. You have to send down a guy like Tyler Austin, who is hitting the snot out of the baseball. Two home runs yesterday, midweek this week when Greg Bird's ready to come up. This guy is going to be a minor leaguer.
They're playing a pretty decent first base, if you ask me.
Oh, so, without a doubt.
And here's the thing that I was talking about last week with the Yankees. The reason that the Astros beat the Yankees last year in the ALCS, in my mind, is the fact that they went and got Justin Verlander. That was the difference maker in that if Justin Verlander is not in that rotation, the Yankees are playing in the World Series. I'm telling you. So it comes down to that one decision or that one opportunity that Houston seized last year, and they made it happen, and they got him. They absorbed the contract, and look how good he's been for them this year. But this is what it comes down to the Yankees. The Yankees are going to have a great season. We all know that, right? Everybody knows it. Everybody in baseball knows it. And when it comes down to playing either Houston, Cleveland, or Boston, it's going to come down probably to go against three top-flight pitchers in all three instances. And you know that Boston's probably going to make a trade at the trade deadline to try to refortify their starting rotation. All of this stuff right now is great. It looks fantastic. It's great with the Tyler Austins and the Andujars of the world and the Torreses of the world and everybody else. Yankees are playing great. But what does it truly come down to for the Yankee fan and for Brian Cashman and the Steinbrenner family? It comes down to we want to win a World Series, and what is it going to take for us to get through Houston, Cleveland, and Boston?
Yeah, and I think you'll get a bidding war on those top pitchers, and I think Houston will still look to add somebody, too. I don't even think that they're going to be satisfied.
I don't think people realize just how – I mean, I know that the hardcore baseball fan knows it. I know the hardcore Yankee fan knows it. And I know people who live and breathe this stuff every day know it. You know, a starting pitcher in baseball is like what Marc-Andre Fleury is doing for the Vegas Golden Knights in hockey. They can steal games for you. They can go out there, play their ass off, and next thing you know, you're standing there and you're waiting for an NHL Stanley Cup final in Vegas of all places, right?
Yeah.
And that's exactly what Verlander was for the Houston Astros last year. When you look at the performance that he gave them, you know that when it comes time to play those high-level games, those high-stress and anxiety games, what it's going to take for the Yankees, I still believe this, and I'll say this all season long, they are going to have to get another top-flight pitcher in here. And they have the wealth to do it. They have all the prospects. They have everything that any other team out there would want trading with a number one pitcher or for a number one pitcher.
You know, it's a scary proposition. You got the Yankees and the Red Sox. The Yankees 30-13, the Red Sox 32-15. The Yankees with a better winning percentage and in first place. One of these teams, if they continue on this track, one of those teams could have close to 100 wins and have to play in a wild card play-in game. I mean, so winning this division is going to be so imperative because one of those teams could get knocked right out and have to play a wild card play-in game and maybe 100 wins. Maybe both of these teams get to 100 wins.
Right.
It's possible on the pace that they're at. It's going to come down to one stupid game for one of those teams where both of them should be automatically in the division series.
And let's say that game happens. And let's say the Yankees are in that game. Who is most likely going to pitch that game?
Well, Severino, like last year.
Right,
yes.
And then what does that do now to the next series that the Yankees have to play in?
I mean, it compromises the rotation.
But that's the point. Yep. The point is, you know, you have to really look hard and see why it is so imperative that the Yankees get another arm in this rotation. Obviously, it's not going to happen now. It's going to happen 5 or 6, 7 weeks from now, whenever the trading deadline is. But that's what it comes down to. It's going to come down to whether or not you have a guy that can go on the road, win a game 5 on the road against a Verlander or, you know, some other top flight pitcher. I just think that it's inevitable. It has to happen. If the Yankees are going to win the World Series, that's the way they're going to have to do it.
Yeah, and I want to clear something up from Friday and Thursday because I don't know how many tweets I got over the weekend, especially after Sunday's game. You still want to trade DeGrom and Syndergaard? You guys are nuts for wanting to trade them. We made it so abundantly clear what we were saying, but still wasn't getting through those who were thick-headed. We were saying if the Mets are out of it or they're scuffling around 500 and they want to rebuild this team the right way, those are the two guys that you're going to have to trade to get something significant back to replenish the farm system. Did we say that they should trade those guys now or they should give up on the season? No. Did we say that we wanted to trade Syndergaard and DeGrom? No, we said with the Mets' cheapness, because we know they're not going to go out and get a Harper or Machado, they're not going to spend that money, and the way that the farm system is now, that if they fell out of it in 2018, that is a route that they should take to replenish the farm system. So I don't want, after every DeGrom or Syndergaard great start, you still want to trade them? I never wanted to trade them. This is just the thing that they would have to do if they wanted to rebuild this team the right way.
But if DeGrom pitches the way he did the other night, just think how much more you can get in return for him. Just keep pitching really good. Don't worry about it. Just keep pitching good. That's great. Show everybody how great you are. Show everybody you're a top 5 pitcher in the league, and show everybody how you could be the next Justin Verlander.
Yes.
And maybe, just maybe, if in fact that is the case and that's where we are come that trading deadline, then you do that. Not now,
right?
But then you do that. But that's why we talked about it. That's why we brought it up. Plus the fact that everybody's getting rained out and there was no baseball and we needed to throw something out there to see if anybody would bite. And guess what?
Yeah.
The entire baseball universe bought on the whole thing.
And I still believe it. If they're falling out,
sure,
and if they are totally out of it, that's the route that I would go. But, you know, encouraging signs, and you expect Syndergaard and DeGrom to be pretty damn good against a team that was in a historic slump in Arizona. But some real encouraging signs is Conforto look like he broke out of it. Ahmed Rosario showing you some pop, and he's actually hitting the ball. And Devin Mesoraco, another big home run, and a guy who I know that you're comparing him against the league's worst at that position. So,
but they went out and they did something. They
got
it right.
They did. And so far, he has been very, very good. He looks re-energized. He defensively command of the game, and he's hit a couple of big home runs for them. So, I mean, those are the positives with the Mets. The problem is when you come out of a series, even though you're playing the Marlins, but when you come out of a series where you sweep the Diamondbacks and you see that Jason Vargas is on the mound, it just sort of sucks the life out of you. It really does, because I don't expect a damn, I don't care who they're playing, I don't expect a damn thing out of him until he shows it to me.
All right, so, you know, we also have the NBA and NHL playoffs going on right now. You know, the NBA playoffs have been so disappointing. So every game's a blowout, and it's just like, you watch James Harden last night.
Yeah, both Harden and Paul were just horrible.
I'm not even talking about their offense. I'm talking about their defense.
Yeah, they could. Well, I mean.
What?
I mean, this is what you're going to get at times from these guys, you know?
I mean, it was just, it was brutal. And I'm like, these guys are playing for the right to go to the NBA championship. And I don't know. I don't know what to tell you. It's just such a lazy game. It just doesn't look right. And it didn't look right the other night when Houston beat Golden State. Like, it looked like Golden State was out of it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
These games are not compelling at all.
Right, which doesn't make any sense to me because I thought that these games would be close. I mean, you can't be – like, the Rockets won over 60 games this year and lost by 41 points in a playoff game. I mean, how is that even possible? It's hard to wrap your mind around. Now, I love watching the Warriors do what they do. I think it's really exciting. But when it gets to the point where, I mean, they're up by 30, you're not watching the game any longer.
You know, it's amazing. After game two, I don't know, all the talking meatheads were talking about how Steph Curry's not the same. He's obviously still injured and all this other crap.
And it carried over in the first half of game three, too.
Yeah. Then he comes out and scores 35 points last night. Right. I mean, come on.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, it's just a matter of, I guess it's as simple as making shots or not making shots. But, I mean... You know, he looked like he was fine to me last night.
No, he was. No, and he ended up figuring it out in the second half. And
third quarter was off the charts.
Yeah, I'm not ready to say that this series is totally over because I would not be shocked if the Rockets won game four and tied this series going back to Houston.
But any of these games compelling, though? I mean, none. Not even Boston and Cleveland are compelling.
Yeah.
Just bad basketball all the way around. So it'd be nice if you had two teams where, you know, you had a final shot or something to win a game, or maybe we can get into an overtime or something.
Well,
there was no reason to watch the fourth quarter of that game last night.
No, I know. I wouldn't quit on these two series. I think both of them still have the potential to go 6 or 7. But here's the real problem, is whoever comes out of the West, either Houston or Golden State, is going to just truck whoever comes out of the East. That's the biggest problem, is that you're looking at the NBA Finals and saying that the Western Conference team is winning the championship.
But if you want to sit here and tell me that the Rockets and the Warriors are essentially the finals in the NBA, these games have been terrible.
Yeah.
They're so one-sided, and it's, I don't know what it is. I mean, I know that, like, say, the Golden Knights have, I think they've only lost 3 games in the playoffs this year. But so you would say, oh, they're just going flying right through everybody. Every game's a struggle. Every game is a fight until the end.
Yeah,
all the games are compelling because, you know, last night the home team, in this case was Winnipeg, just grinding throughout the whole game, just trying to get something on net, and Marc-Andre Fleury is playing out of his mind, just keeps the home team frustrated. And, you know, I could say the same thing about the Capitals and the Lightning. I mean, it's just the games are tight, they're close. And they have you sitting on the edge of your seat every single game. These NBA games, the fourth quarter, the games are over.
Yeah, I know. It's been like that during the postseason. I'm a big NBA fan, but when you wait and wait for these games, and you wait for Saturday, and the Cavs blow out the Celtics, and you wait for Sunday, and Golden State blows out Houston.
Let me ask you a question.
Like,
do you think the schedule, because there's such a separation of games, you know, kind of inhibits either team like getting on a roll? Like, Houston won the other night. So let's say they travel and they play the next night, or 2 nights later, as opposed to like 3 days later. Do you think that they, you know, capture some sort of role or get on some sort of role?
I don't know. I think that there's a better chance of that happening. What I think is these two teams are so good offensively that whatever one is playing better and hitting their shots within a game is just going to run the other one out of the building. That's what I think what's going to happen. That's why I don't think it's close.
Yeah, I don't know. It's just, we were waiting all year for this series, and it's just been such a dud.
I wouldn't count it out yet.
I'm not counting anything out. All I'm just saying, I was hoping, we would get compelling games.
Right.
And and none of these games, even with the Warriors winning game one, that wasn't a real compelling game.
No, I think if Houston can find a way to win game four, it'll be a close one, and then all of a sudden it changes. But if they get blown out again, then forget about it. And I do think that Boston and Cleveland will be interesting. I think LeBron will be tested. It'll go to a game seven. That'll be fun.
Let me ask you a question. Golden State wins the next game. How do you think Houston's going to look in game five?
Oh, you know how I feel about that already, because I was all in on the Rockets last year. I mean, I was all about James Harden and the Rockets and D'Antoni last year, and they made me look like a fool in that game six against the Spurs where he quit. He didn't show up. He didn't want to play in the game. It's as simple as that. There was no injury. There was no nothing. I didn't hear a thing about it. The guy did not want to compete anymore. He made $46 million with his salary combined with all the endorsements and everything else last year, and he said, that's it. I'm tired. I don't want to play. We're going to lose. Same thing will happen again if it's 3-1 and they go into that closeout game in Game 5. I guarantee it, at least from Harden. I don't know about Paul. He might have a little more guts than James Harden, but James Harden will do the same thing again.
That was about as bad a performance as you're ever going to see from what you would have thought was the best team in the league all year long.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.